morning. Would you like some time for rebuttal?
Yes, 3 minutes.
Certainly.
I'm Lynn Fleming, an Associate General Counsel with the University of Virginia, here representing the University of Virginia Medical Center. The Circuit Court committed errors of law when it relied upon Kurt Jordan's advance directive and durable general power of attorney to conclude that Kurt Jordan accessed his own electronic medical records. By statute, Virginia law limits the use of both an advance directive and durable power of attorney, and neither document had any force of effect as a matter of law. The Circuit Court also erred in failing to apply Virginia Code Section 32.1, 127.1:03, which declares that medical records are the property of the entity maintaining them. By ignoring the stipulation of the parties and the electronic audit findings that Susan Jordan herself accessed her ex-husband's electronic medical record on 4 occasions.
Is there a difference between using your code to access something for your own personal benefit and using your code to access something for someone else?
Yes, Your Honor. The employees of the medical center who have clinical responsibilities have an access code that permits them to enter into patients' records for purposes of clinical care.
And it's the policy, not a statute or regulation, that specifically, and even more specifically, some training documentation that's in the record, that specifies this use of the access code to get to the information.
It's both, Your Honor. Both HIPAA, the Federal Insurance and Portability, I'll just call it HIPAA, and state law permit release of medical records pursuant to an authorization. Both statutes permit the covered entity or the healthcare entity to release with an authorization. There's no permission for an individual, an employee.
Well, it's just
patient.
Silent. I mean, HIPAA just says you're released to the individual. It doesn't say how that's done.
Virginia state law requires an authorization for the release. The authorization goes to the healthcare entity. But under HIPAA, HIPAA requires that the term covered entity, which is any entity that bills for healthcare services, develop policies and procedures to safeguard its information and to audit to see that those policies and procedures are being followed.
Right, but we can't, as a matter of our jurisdiction, we can't look at policy questions. We're just stuck with law, meaning statutes, regulations, etc.
The policies in this case prohibited this access. To the extent the hearing officer found that there was no violation, he relied on a construct of fiction that the durable power of attorney was in effect, and so was the advance directive, and therefore it was Kurt Jordan who was at the authorization.
Let me ask you about I follow your argument with respect to the advance medical directive, because that, as I understand that, comes into effect when the person can no longer make decisions, and that's not the case with this individual. What about, and this is a long statutory site, but 32.1, 127.1:03A, sorry, it's long, but it says healthcare entities may, and when required, shall disclose health records to, and this is part 6D16, to an agent appointed under an individual's power of attorney. So that statute seems to be pretty specific that health, that these disclosures can and should be made to someone who has power of attorney. Why isn't that?
Well, Your Honor, two responses to that. The law authorizes the healthcare entity to make the disclosure, not an individual of an employee taking it upon herself to access them. And secondly, the advance directive statute uses the term medical power of attorney in the context of that statute, and the University of Virginia Medical Center's policies require an advance directive, and the statute governing durable powers of attorney in Virginia excludes healthcare decisions and excludes situations in which a governmental entity has created a form for the use.
All right, well, let's talk about those. The gathering of information, it seems to me, is not a healthcare decision. As I mean, a healthcare decision might be, do I have the surgery? Do I do the physical therapy? Versus getting information that then you make an informed decision as to the surgery or the physical therapy or whatever. So why is the conveying of information a healthcare decision?
Your Honor, again, I'm going to go to the hospital's policies on this. Parsing all of this out, what's a healthcare decision? When is somebody knowingly authorizing release of his or her health information to a third party? The medical center has determined that it's if the person's not capable of making a decision, it's the advance directive that would set that. Otherwise, any capable person can fill out an authorization for release of documents, bring it to Health Information Services. That person would be provided a copy of his records on CD or otherwise.
Ms. Fleming, even if we agree regarding the advanced medical directive that it doesn't apply here and that the general power of attorney doesn't apply here, assume for a moment we agree with it. The hearing officer finding that it was her assisting him accessing his, utilizing his right of access, isn't that a factual determination? And if it is, under the unique standards of the grievance proceeding binding on us, can we touch it?
Your Honor, it's a factual determination that's based on an error of law, and it's erroneous as a matter of law. The decision was based on his erroneous reading of the advance directive and the power of attorney, and relying on an authorization for release, the one that's in the record, was dated after these events occurred. That led to that factual finding. They're errors of law, and yes, you can review it. And I would also submit that there is no factual evidence in this record to support that finding. There's none.
Well, but two questions. One, how about the hearing officer citing the testimony that from him that she was doing it to help him with his access? And two, even if there's not, can we touch that factual finding?
You can touch that factual finding if it's based on an error of law, as we have consistently argued, and also if it's unsupported by the record. The hearing officer was charged with finding whether the medical center had a policy on this, and it did, and had training on this, and it did, and following that rather than rewriting them. And he exceeded the scope of his authority as a matter of law. And I think you can
But one of the things you keep coming back to in your brief is policy, policy, policy. But under the statute and our precedent interpreting that, we can't revisit. I mean, that goes to DHRM, and then it's over with. We can't touch that.
Your Honor, DHRM, in discussing those policies, also erroneously relied on the advance directive and the power of attorney, and that conclusion was based on an error of law. However, this court has authority to reach errors of law, and it is our argument that this entire ruling was premised on significant errors of law and reliance on statutes that do not apply.
All right. The other exception you mentioned is the power created on the form prescribed by government or governmental subdivision, agency, or instrumentality for a governmental purpose. And so my question is that, basically you're talking about a release of information. Is that a power within the intent of this clause? And also, is it for a governmental purpose? And the one ready analogy that comes to mind is the IRS has its own separate form that you have to fill out. So a general power of attorney doesn't allow you to go to the IRS and file taxes for somebody. Well, that's easier to see that that's some kind of power, number one, and two, that it's for a governmental purpose, which is you're paying taxes to the government, as opposed to an individual asking for his own healthcare information. Is that a power, and then as opposed to just something else? And then also, is it for a governmental purpose, which is what this clause provides?
Your Honor, the University of Virginia Medical Center is a 600-bed hospital that is the only general acute care hospital that is an agency of the state government. It receives funds from the Commonwealth of Virginia. It treats uninsured people and receives compensation for that for the Commonwealth of Virginia. And much of the healthcare it provides is in furtherance of the purposes of the Commonwealth of Virginia. It is absolutely a governmental entity.
And no question about that.
Yeah, and has created a form that authorizes...
Right, but not... And I get that.
I'm
but I'm getting at power and governmental purpose, because not everything that the hospital does is going to be a governmental purpose, I would think, anyway. For example, it buys supplies, or, it has a marketing campaign, or whatever. So the statute talks about a governmental purpose, and when an individual... I mean, we just don't have any cases that interpret that particular clause. And so I'm trying to figure out, if an individual is asking for healthcare information, is that a power? And is the disclosure of that information fall within a governmental purpose?
Well, Your Honor, the medical center is created in state law. It is permitted to treat patients and conduct functions under special provisions in state law. And yes, the how it releases information on a form that it's been created, goes through its own policy procedure, is a governmental function. And the hospital is unique in that it treats persons who are uninsured and receives significant state funding for that purpose. So yes, how records are provided, how care is provided, is a governmental function of the medical center.
Right.
I also want to say this.
What do we make, or does it have any significance at all, the hearing officer's finding of fact that her supervisor ratified the access?
Your Honor, these policies that are at issue were reviewed and approved by senior leadership of the medical center, and a middle-level manager such as this had no authority to waive those policies. Further, the medical center disavowed her actions by disciplining her, and this was ultra vires, and the medical center is not bound by that ruling. And I see that my 3 minutes are almost up. I'd like to...
All right, thank you.
Good morning, Judge.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, I am Janice Redinger, Susan Jordan, who is in the courtroom today. If I could just address a couple of things that were raised by Ms. Fleming. So the question from Judge Russell about the manager ratifying the conduct, that was an issue that was raised by me at the hearing officer level, but was never addressed by the university at that level. So if, in fact, there was some opposition to that argument, it certainly wasn't heard by the hearing officer at that time. I think that the unique thing about this case is, because of the context of it being a grievance, this court has, very limited jurisdiction, a very limited scope of authority, as did the circuit court, which was unusual for her because she was sitting basically as an intermediate appellate court, and you all are the Supreme Court today.
There's still a court above us.
I know. Well, I think that this is the end of the road for a grievance, I believe. I hope. The interesting thing here is that there is no sufficiency of the evidence, for example, review. The facts are the facts as found by the hearing officer. They can't be reviewed. They couldn't have been reviewed by Judge Higgins in the circuit court. She did, over my objection, but still upheld them as being sufficiently found in the record, as supported by the record. So it seems to me that the real issue in this case is twofold, as I argued to the circuit court, and that is, one, in addressing the hearing officer's finding of fact, one, and I believe completely dispositive issue is, was Kurt, in fact, accessing his own records and using Susan, my client, as a facilitator to do that, because given his grave medical condition? And remember, the policy at UVA allows for the accessing of these electronic medical records in three ways. One, if they're your own record. Two, if it's permitted by UVA policy. And three, if the law otherwise authorizes it. And so I argued to the hearing officer, which he upheld, and again to the circuit court, and again to you, is that Kurt was actually accessing his own records when he came to Susan and asked her to assist him in doing that. And the hearing officer...
But he didn't do it physically. You concede that. She actually is the one who accessed the records to the extent that access is a physical action.
I do concede that. The policy at issue here that she was sanctioned under or disciplined under doesn't talk about that. It doesn't directly address that point. But he was definitely sitting next to her at the computer terminal.
But the testimony is unequivocal on that,
right,
from everybody. But the problem is she uses this pen or
right,
you know, of her own.
Her own.
And so that's how it starts registering is, then there's this audit.
Right.
But so I understand that the agency notion of she helps him out at his request and so on. But that's the snag, is that instead of using his number, she uses her own.
It certainly was the thing that raised the red flag to the university. But the hearing officer made a finding of fact, a twofold finding of fact on that issue. One was that Kurt was in fact accessing his own records, using her as a facilitator, and two, that process that I just described was not in fact a violation of policy. And so those two things are not legal issues. Those are factual issues.
Well, the policy issue, would that be in... not a question for the hearing officer? Wouldn't that be a question for DHRM?
Well, it was reviewed by DHRM and upheld by DHRM, but ultimately it's an interpretation of that policy by the hearing officer. So it was reviewed and upheld, and that's where that issue should have stayed. And the second issue...
Well, it has to, as a matter of law.
Right, and that's, of course, my position in this whole appeal, is that, you know, at some point, there are no more reviews because the facts are the facts, you know, they're in etched in stone, and then the DHRM upheld the policy issues. There are no legal issues left. And the second issue, of course, is that the hearing officer, he made two more findings of fact that I think are pertinent here. The second one, the broad category, was the use of the either the advanced medical directive or the durable general power of attorney, which specifically allowed for the review or collection, I can't remember the exact language, of not only medical records, but electronic medical records.
And any of the conditions precedent for the advanced medical directive becoming efficacious, had any of them been triggered?
In terms of his disability, no. He was not disabled.
All right. Well, then how is that document relevant to anything?
I think it's a typical advanced medical directive is a two-step document. One is, the first part of it is the appointment of the agent. And that was accomplished by the first part. Now,
but only empowering the agent if a qualifying event occurs, which you concede did not occur.
But in the real world, I agree with that. I agree that there's under no circumstances that existed at that time could Susan Jordan have made medical decisions for him.
If the hospital was treating him and had accepted her decision on his behalf, that would have been a battery, correct?
I agree. But I don't think that because that triggering mechanism hadn't happened yet, that is, his disability or his incompetence, that she couldn't use her agency to monitor his medical condition and so forth. She just couldn't make the decisions until that trigger happened. But even aside from the advanced medical directive, there is the durable power of attorney, which specifically allowed her, which again appointed her as his agent. We're not talking about authorization, we're talking about agency.
And what your opposing counsel points out there is there's this provision, 64.2.1601, that says this chapter applies to all powers of attorney except. So you got to find an exception. And the hospital points to two things. One, the power to make healthcare decisions, and a power created on a form prescribed by a government or governmental subdivision agency or instrumentality for a governmental purpose. So those are the two exceptions that the hospital marshals to say power of attorney doesn't apply.
Well, for say a couple things. One, This was never raised in front of the hearing officer. So he never had an opportunity to address this, if this is a legal issue.
Okay.
Two, I can craft a power of attorney to give somebody authority to do anything for me. And this one happened to be all-inclusive.
But if we're looking for, you know, statutory authority, then the question is this a power to make health care decisions as opposed to the gleaning of information? And is this a power when you go to somebody and ask for information about yourself, and is for a governmental purpose?
Well, it's certainly not for a governmental purpose the way that was used. It was for a personal purpose. It is a power, but not to make decisions. It is a power. Whatever power is conferred in that document is what it is.
Subject to any limitations placed on it by statute.
Of course. But I don't see that as being a limitation for the use that it was used for in this particular situation.
I mean, my problem with that argument is this statute that says you may disclose health records to an agent appointed under an individual's power of attorney. So that seems about as express as it gets, which says, yes, you can do this. So I don't see why the General Assembly would clearly grant you that and then obliquely in this other statute that's broader take that specific grant away. So at any rate, I don't know if you have any...
I think you may have stumped me. I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, generally, as a matter of statutory construction, the specific controls over the general. So if you specifically granted the authority to get health care records, and then there's a general statute that says, well, if you have a power for a governmental purpose, then that has to be a separate form, like with filing taxes with the IRS. You go to their website and there's a separate form. So maybe that's the answer, is the specific controls over the general.
Well, couldn't, in the sense that the power of attorney give her the ability to obtain his health care records, but in the manner that a person subject to it with powers from a power of attorney would get them, i.e. she goes to the medical records office, fills out the hospital's form, and gets the records. Isn't that different than accessing, using her hospital access to access them, arguably in violation of policy?
It is a different way to access the records.
That's a matter of policy, not
statute. Yes, it is a matter of policy. And in this case, and of course, you know, keep going back to it, the hearing officer, you know, made a finding of fact that the use of these documents were not a violation of policy, and I think that that ends that inquiry. But certainly...
Even if the DHRM is flat out wrong, can we even touch that?
I don't think so. I think that it's ended at that point. And then, of course, the other issue is the condemnation of the manager, and I don't think that's ultra vires, but...
Well, let me ask you a question about this, because I found the hearing officer's reports contradictory on the same page on that issue. He goes through a long explanation that the hospital has never that the hospital's evidence is that they always terminate people for violating the policy in the way that they contend that your client violated the policy. And in fact, it shows a lack of judgment and that they never mitigated, and it's terrible. Everybody gets the same punishment. And 2.5 paragraphs later, he says, in case anybody reverses me for my finding of improper access, I find that there was disparate treatment because the manager violated the policy in a slightly different way and received a different punishment. How do you reconcile those two findings, which seem to be diametrically opposed to one another in the same document?
Yeah, and I agree there's some strangeness about this hearing officer's opinion, but the manager, I took the position, I believe that the manager was disciplined because she approved the access. And regardless, I mean, Susan Jordan is allowed to rely on her manager's approval. Manager speaks for the university, maybe a middle manager, but she speaks for the university. And she gave that approval. And that was a finding that the hearing officer made. She was disciplined because, in fact, of her giving that approval against the university wishes, I guess. But in any event, I believe that the hearing officer's findings of fact are controlling, dispositive of this of this appeal, and I would ask that the court affirm the circuit court and remand just for purposes of wrapping things up with attorney's fees and so forth. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honor, in managing a 600-bed hospital, the medical center employs physicians, nurses, physical therapists, all extraordinarily well-educated, competent, trained people. It does not want to terminate the employment of those people and lose those skills. And as a way to not do that, it develops policies and it trains on those policies. In this case, Susan Jordan was trained four times in mandatory training on policy, and the training said employees who have job-related access to the electronic medical record system may access their own PHR electronically. This does not extend beyond your own medical record. You may not access electronic medical records of any other person.
And if we were tabula rasa,
yes,
I would understand that argument.
Yes.
But what do we do with the fact that DHRM found that she didn't violate the policy?
Your Honor, my answer is, as it has been, that DHRM at page 338 of the appendix relied upon that advance directive to reach that conclusion, and that's an error of law also. You'll see they say he asked the grievant to assist him. He named the grievant as an agent under both his advanced medical directive.
But, we're not being asked to review DHRM's decision, and we can't. So
right.
Even if it's wrong, I mean, suppose the U.S. Supreme Court is wrong on a point of constitutional law. We can't do anything about it. It's the same with DHRM.
But this court is vested with the authority to review errors of law.
We are.
And these rulings were premised, the circuit court's ruling were premised on errors of law, as we have pointed out in our brief. One point that I could not find any case law on, Your Honor, is whether any employee can use a durable power of attorney to violate her employer's policy, as is what happened here. I cannot find any case law on that.
Statutes don't seem to address.
No.
They don't seem to get that granular.
No, they don't. And I also want to address counsel's point about not raising this issue at the hearing. Obviously, at the hearing, didn't know what the ruling was going to be on the advance directive, but at page 36 of the hearing transcript, statement, there's nothing in medical center policy which allows a person to give someone else access to view his or her electronic record. There's no paper that would authorize this release. This issue was raised repeatedly during the hearing. To the hearing officer was aware of it. In fact, in the closing statement, the statement was advanced directives are presented and done through medical records. There's no ability to expand that. So this was an objection that was raised repeatedly. Thank you for your time.
Thank you both for your arguments and your briefs. We'll come down and greet